just get used to it. Good morning, everybody. All right. This morning, we're back to Daniel chapter 6. So, again, if there's if you have your own Bible, if you'd open up your Bible to open up with me to Daniel chapter 6. There's several Bibles around. You can open them up. So, how many of you guys are, how many of you guys have taken an art class before? Raise your hand if you've taken an art class before. This morning I wanted to start out by just showing you some images. Some artists are really talented, creative, and are able to have an image that shows two things at the same time. You guys ever seen these images before where you can look at it one way and look at it the other way? Some of these are really classic. Some of them I know you've seen before because they're just so out there. They've been around for so long. Okay, so what do you guys see here? You see the pretty lady? How many of you see the pretty lady? Okay, how many of you see the elderly lady? Yeah, how many, just kind of goes back and forth for you. It's like sometimes you look at it and just goes back and forth. Okay, so yep, there's the elderly lady. Okay, you guys know what this one is? Yeah, I don't know, when I look at it, I typically see the face, I see the whole thing first. And then I really have to look at, like, the nose. It was hard for me. I couldn't get this one for quite a while. What do you guys see? A man with a beard, okay. What's his expression? What is it? Sad? Okay, what's the other picture? Mad? Yeah, can you guys see the mad face? I couldn't, for the longest time, like, I have no idea where the mad face is. What I had to do is I had to block this out. I had to block this portion out. And then I could see more of the mad face. Can you see it now? No, you can't see it. Like, this is the eye. This is the other eye with the mad face. And this is his mouth. And so I had to block it out. Do you see it now? Yeah, I had to block out the other eye. Whenever I look at it, I still see the sad face. I really have to concentrate to look at the mad face. So his nose, this becomes his nose if he's a mad guy. This is still his mouth. Yeah, can you see it? We've had a revelation. Okay, yeah. So it took me a while. okay, and here's some more modern ones or more, colorful ones that are easier, I think. Yeah. See that? Old guy. Or a guy on a pony with a woman lying down next to a river, you know? it's kind of an odd, kind of surreal. It's like, I don't know who did this. It feels very Salvador Dali, kind of like, you know, just odd. This one's kind of creepy. It's kind of creepy, right? It's two old people. Or two people sitting next to each other, one with a beehive on her head. I don't know what that's supposed to, you know, and playing music, and or two very elderly people, you know. Yeah. And I think you've seen, can you guys see the angry bunny? You know, obviously you can see the cat upside down, but can you see the angry bunny? Yeah. Okay, so there's the angry bunny and the cat. And I think you guys have seen some of these. I know Randy's brought in these before, you know, where you look at it and you're like, whoa, what the heck's going on here? But yeah, just a 3D shot of the sidewalk. This is sidewalk chalk art. And some guy just in his wife or girlfriend or whatever just sits, grabs an oar, and it looks like they're, you know, they're just sitting on the sidewalk, but it looks like they're going down the rapids or whatever. You know, pretty amazing 3D art. Or this one, you know, just I think, you know, like, so on the sidewalk, she's just going like this on the sidewalk, you know, and it looks like she's on the tiger. But these things where you can just look at them, and they appear to be one way, but they're actually, in reality, another way, or you can kind of see them in both ways. And these drawings and these pictures are used to illustrate a deeper point. And that is, you know, what I titled my sermon is, what we see in life and what is happening may be two different things. Okay? What we see in life and what is actually happening may be two different things. So sometimes what we have happening is we're experiencing life. We're going through life right now, high school, college, you know, married, you know, just going through life. And we're experiencing life. Life just comes to us a lot of times. Sometimes we make life, sometimes it just comes to us, you know. And sometimes what we're experiencing happening around us is different. There's a reality, a larger reality that's happening from God's vantage point. Okay, from God's vantage point. And these might be two different things from what we see and what we experience. Okay? So, I don't know. You guys got to keep that in mind. It, you know, what as you walk through life and as you experience trials, problems, joy, as you experience life, a lot of times, God's reality, there's something bigger going on that is happening in correlation with what you're experiencing. And sometimes we're able to see it, and sometimes we're not. We're not, okay? And this is what the story, many of you, you know, growing up, I've heard Daniel the Lion's Den before. I mean, almost everyone who's been church has heard this story. You know, we have a book from Morgan and Isabel that talks about Daniel the Lion's Den and all that stuff. You've heard the story 1,000 times, but have you ever considered what is happening here? What is going on with the reality that is happening around Daniel? Before we get into Daniel, I kind of want to just back up and just take a look at Jeremiah 29:10-14. Just to kind of remind you of kind of where this is, how this is taking place, the background, some of the context. Jeremiah 29:10-14 says this. This is what the Lord says. When 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come to you and fulfill my gracious promise to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back from captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and the places where I have banished you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile. Okay? So remember, this was decades before God's people were taken from Israel and moved out and exiled into Babylon. And you remember, you guys, if you can remember this far back, when I first started this series, I said, look, since God loves you, since he cares, what was happening in Israel was the people in the southern, there's two kingdoms at the time, there's the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. This is the southern kingdom that we're talking about. What's happening was that again, the culture was that people just, during the time of Jeremiah and leading up to the time of exile, people just weren't really tracking with Yahweh. They were just kind of like, we're too busy. Our lives are just, we got other things going on. We'd rather, there was kind of apathy happening. So we just don't really, we're just not into you, God. There are other idols that we'd rather worship. Other gods. We'd rather busy ourselves with other things. And so I started out the series by saying, yeah, once he's in a relationship, once the Holy Spirit comes and lives in you, and you're in a relationship with him, he's He's never going to leave you or forsake you. Just like he does with Israel, he's like, look, I'm in a relationship with you. I love you. You guys, you're just kind of wandering away. You've turned the other direction. You're just kind of meandering away in life, and you're not in a relationship. You're not loving me. You're not worshiping me. You're not following me. And so Jeremiah, this is, again, decades before this has actually happened, tells the people, like, this is what's going to happen. For 70 years, you're going to be uprooted from your homes. You're going to be attacked. The place, someone's going to come in, take you out, and you're going to be away for 70 years. But he's like, look, I have plans to prosper you. I have plans to give you hope. And a lot of times, this is what he's looking for. He's like, I'm going to pull you out, and you're going to experience some pain, trial, trouble. But when you seek me with your heart, with your whole heart, that's when I'll be found by you. That's when, all right? And he says, I'll bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile. So eventually you'll come back to this place. You see where you're standing now, your homes, where you love, where you know, the place where I brought your ancestors out of Egypt and brought you through the wilderness, and I've given you this land. Eventually you'll be back here, all right? This is my promise to you. So again, what we saw with Daniel is it came true. Daniel was the guy, it was his generation that was like, well, you guys have really not been tracking or following or worshiping me, so Babylon came in and took over the southern kingdom, uprooted them, brought them all the way over to Babylon, you know, thousands of miles away from their home. And we know that there are some who were tracking with God, because Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were some, like, examples of guys who were just like, we're still worshiping you. We're still worshiping you, right? We're still connected with you, God. And so, what happens was this. Where we left off was, Babylon had been going. We'd watched Daniel through Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar, and he had the dream. He had the dream about the statue, you know. He also had the dream about the tree, the giant tree. And through all this time, Daniel and the other brothers, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, had been kind of brought out. God's been using them, kind of showing his power through them. But the last time we left off was in chapter 5, and there was the young Daniel in early on with Nebuchadnezzar, and then where we left off in chapter 5 was about 20 years after Daniel had been brought in to Babylon. And you guys, I don't know if you guys remember the story, this was a couple of weeks ago, but there was another ruler at the time named Belshazzar, and unlike Nebuchadnezzar, he never really turned to God. He heard about Nebuchadnezzar and the amazing things that Yahweh did, but he was like, I'll do what I please. And you guys, I don't know if you remember the story, there was the story of the giant hand that was writing on the wall and basically said, your time is up, your time is finished, your kingdom is going to be over. And sure enough, I mean, even the king Belshazzar was just freaked out, like, no way, like, this is, and there was some writing on the wall, so this is, it's over. And that very night, the Persians came in and took over Babylon, and now we have the Persian Empire and a new ruler. But I want you to think about it in this sense, guys, is as we look at life, and we look at what we're experiencing in real time, and what is happening from God's perspective, is that think about the Israelites. They're still in Babylon. They've been here for numerous decades now. And they're looking around. Maybe some of them know of Jeremiah's prophecy, his writing. Some of them probably are like, didn't Jeremiah say that we'd be here for some time? 70 years. So they're in the midst of the Babylonian empire, and they're like, wait, did one of the prophets talk about this? Some of them may have remembered. Others probably didn't know it at all. Didn't know it at all. But think about from their perspective. They've been in Babylon. I mean, for 70 years, that's a whole generation. Some people were born in Babylon, and died in Babylon. Some people, you know, you look around at what they're experiencing in real time, it's like they're in a spot where they're under oppression. They're away from their old homes, from where they grew up, by force. And they look around in life, and they're like, how will this ever end? There is no light to the end. There's no ending point to this. How is it possible that we'll ever be back home? What are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to rise up, make a run for it, and run back to our old house, and hopefully they won't catch up to us? We have no army, nothing. Are we supposed to make a break for it? Is that how we'll be freed from captivity? Like, just they've been there for years. And sometimes for you, you might be in a spot now. Or if you're not in a spot now, this message in Daniel 6 is important for you. Because if you don't have the message that Daniel is going to be talking about in Daniel 6 today, if you don't need it today, you're going to need it later. All right? You're going to need it later. Because everyone is going to experience something, maybe not like being uprooted and being taken out, but everyone will experience a time of trouble, a time of darkness where all the walls are caving in on you, they're caving in, life crumbles around you, and you see no way out. This is where the Israelites are like, just 70 years, like, we have no idea how this will be carried out. So that's their perspective. And look what happens. What's interesting about the different empires is that there was the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Assyria, these guys called the Assyrians, overtook the northern kingdom. They brutalized people. But eventually, Babylon came in. And so Assyria would brutalize. Babylon came in. They took the southern kingdom over. And what Babylon's philosophy was, again, just like we saw in Daniel, what they would do is they're like, okay, we're going to just uproot people, move them to our hometown, re-educate them in the ways that we think and our gods and everything, and that's how we'll rule people. And what happens is with Persia, with the Medo-Persian Empire, what they do is they overtake people. They overtook Babylon. And their philosophy was, look, if we can make people fairly happy, if we can make people somewhat happy, they'll be more likely to follow us. They'll be more likely, like, look, they'll still pay taxes to us. We'll still get rich from them. We'll still own them. They'll still be in our captives. But if we can kind of make them happy, so what happens is eventually, just like Jeremiah says, and I will bring you back from the place which I've carried you into exile, what God sovereignly did is he's like, I'm going to have Persia take over. Their philosophy will be, look, let's return all the people to where they were supposed to be. They'll be a little bit more happier where they're supposed to be. We'll still rule them. They'll still pay taxes. But now, everyone, you can go home. Go home to where you're free to go home. You'll still be under our captivity. You'll still be under our rule. So it's like supernaturally what happened is God said, I already have a plan. I already know what's going to happen. I already see the future and know the future. I make kings. I make countries. I get rid of kings. I put kings on high. And he's like, I've already have a plan. And so eventually, not yet, not in our story today, but eventually, under the Persian rule, they'll say, okay, Israelites, go back to your land. And sure enough, you know, just like Jeremiah said, they go back to the place where they were supposed to be. All right. So now, if you look with me in chapter 6, there are basically four acts in the book of chapter 6, and so we're going to walk through them, okay? We're going to walk through these four acts in Daniel chapter 6. And like we're going to see, like we've just seen here, is that despite present appearances, you guys, despite whatever circumstances you're going through now, or like I said, in the future, when you're placed in these circumstances where where the walls are crumbling and things go dark, despite those appearances, God is still in control. God is in control through all of it. Let's look in Daniel chapter 6 of how this plays out, starting with kind of the first act, kind of the plot, starting with verse 1. It says this: "It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, 'We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God.' So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, 'Oh, King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, and satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so it cannot be altered, in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed.' So Darius put the decree in writing." All right, so new government, new ruler, King Darius, and history, they're not quite sure. They have record of King Darius, but he's not the king. He's not the ruler, all-encompassing ruler of Persia. He's actually kind of more like a local king or a local governor of the area. And Daniel has been through a lot. He's an older guy now. He's maybe midlife, maybe old, even older. And, man, he's gone through a lot. He's been through Nebuchadnezzar. He's been through Belshazzar. Now he's under this new guy. And like in the past, because Daniel's character and because the way God has gifted them, again, he's floated to the top. He's at the top. He was at the top under King Belshazzar. People were like, "You'll be the third guy." And Daniel's like, "Who cares? By the end of tonight, you're going to be gone. Who cares if I'm the third guy in line? It doesn't really matter." But now the king comes in, this new ruler comes in and sees Daniel's got it. He's got this gift, and he's seemingly wise, and he's seemingly very competent. So he rises to the top again. And what happens is everyone around, all the other leaders are like, become jealous. Become like, why is he at the top? Why does he always rise to the top? But look what it says. Look what it says. It says in verse 4, they tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel and his conduct, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Look at Daniel's character here, you guys. Look at him. He was a guy that was trustworthy and negligent. He was connected with Yahweh. He was walking with God still, even through all these years. And he was reflecting the character of his God, right? He was reflecting the character of his God. But there is trouble. There's trouble. These guys, even though Daniel is not making trouble, trouble comes to him because of who he is and because he's kind of walking with the Lord, or because these guys just want the power, right? Trouble comes, all right? And it's the same for us. This is what Jesus says in John 16:33. He says, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." Like, no matter way, no matter how you shape it, some point in your life, there's going to be something like a Daniel situation that you have. Daniel, again, there's some kinds of trouble that we bring on ourselves, right? There's some kind of troubles that it's like because of you are negligent, because you are some sort of maybe sin area in your life that you've chosen, man, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. Other times it's like, look, this was not even brought on. This was not even any near where your fault. But it's like trouble came looking for you. Last summer at our retreat, some of the counselors were together, and I was talking, one of the counselors was sharing, and he said this, he's like, man, what I've noticed from moving from middle school, high school, and then now on to college, he's like, what I've seen in me, and then a lot of my friends around me, Christians, is that, he said, the bubble kind of pops. So the bubble pops. I think what he's referring to is like kind of the Rochester Hills bubble and the Troy bubble, and the bubble of your family kind of pops, you know? And all of a sudden, college is like extremely exciting. You're like just, yeah! You know, like, just I get to go out. I can stay up as late as I want, just hang out as much as I want, just do whatever, you know? And it is exciting. It's just a, you know, but he's like, what I also notice is that, man, it's just like, there's just problems. I didn't expect it. And then, you know, when I was a senior, like, I was so excited. I just, you know, just couldn't wait to get here. But then, like, the bubble popped, you know? And he said, you know, and I think that being in Rochester Hills, being in Troy, being with your family, you should have a bubble, right? There should be some sense. I mean, since your parents, like, love you, they want to protect you, they want to secure you, they want to give you security, you know? There should be some sort of sense of, like, oh, man, like, this is not too bad. This is pretty good, you know? But he's like, after you get to college, like, man, there's just a whole new set of bigger problems and stuff that I see people going through. And again, I don't want to say that high school, I don't want to say that you guys have no problems. You know, I don't want to say, like, the problems you're experiencing are just invalid, they're just nothing, you know, because I know, like, I've seen some of the issues you guys have gone through. I know that there's some heavy stuff that middle school, high school goes through, you know, heavy stuff. But overall, you know, it's kind of like this safer kind of environment that you have until you kind of move out. But then trouble will come, right? Trouble comes in many forms. At least when I think of college, I think of moving on, you know, it can be roommate problems. You know, sometimes it's like the first day you move into college, you got problems already, you know, you're like, what in the world? Who is this person? You know, this person's bizarre. They don't shower. You know, they're rude. Whatever, you know, whatever it is. Day one, you've got issues. It could be academic problems. Some of the things I hear is like, you know, even Pastor Tui alluded to a few weeks ago. It's like, man, in high school, I have to work, but I can somewhat go on cruise control, you know, but then you take the best out of the college and then you move them over, all the best come together. There's another level. I just was talking to a student just yesterday, and he visited a calculus class in college, and he's like, it's just like, I was just sitting in, but he's like, I was just totally lost. Like, I had no idea where this guy was going. He moved so fast. He's like, he just put five problems on the chalkboard, and he's just flying. I had no idea. So I was like, I've heard, when I hear back, like, hey, how are you guys doing? It's like, oh, it's not as easy as I thought it would be. It's really hard. Roommate problems, academic problems, physical problems. I had a friend once, a guy that was on, it's called a summer project that we go on in college, and I got back from summer project, and I had heard that he had cancer just in college, right? Some things that you just don't even, you can't even fathom, you can't even imagine that this would happen. Directional problems. I hear people come back and say, I am so lost. I have no idea where I'm going. I don't know what to major in. I feel like I have to make all my life direction decision like today, you know, and I don't know where to go, you know? Because there's going to be, you're going to experience times when, man, the world where you're at, the relationships around you, what you're experiencing, it just falls apart. And sometimes you feel isolated. Sometimes you feel alone. You feel scared. Sometimes you go into depression. I don't even know, right? Right? And so as you're experiencing life, you look around and you see things on your level of like, this is what I'm experiencing right now. And sometimes you have no idea why you're experiencing what you're experiencing. You have no clue. It doesn't seem, as you examine yourself, you're like, I don't feel like I'm living a life of sin. I don't feel like I'm moving away from God. But you're like, why is this here? Many of you have heard me talk about, and Young has shared his story several times. Young Chen, he's like, look, you know, somewhat familiar with the story. He's like, look, I remember when I first met Young, like maybe 4 years ago, he was already talking about going to New York to be part of Teach America, you know. And so he was a counselor at one of the retreats, and I remember like him mentioning it. And then he got closer to graduating from MSU. He prepared, he applied to Teach of America. He trained, he prepared himself, he got there. And then as he was there, planning his whole year, he'd been accepted, he was planning his whole year, he fell really sick. Like he had heart problems, you know, and it was under so much stress and came back here. And it was one of those things where it's like, why God, why have I've been planning this for a year? I thought this is where you wanted me to go, and now I'm back here? Why? Another example of just kind of the things that you had set up, the plans that you'd always made, the visions and dreams that you'd always thought about crumble. And you're left wondering, like, where are you, God? Why? Right? And so the question for us, question for Daniel, question for you, is when you get to that spot, how are you going to respond? How are you going to respond? What will you do with it when the walls crumble around you, right? What are you going to do with it? Let's see how Daniel responds. Starting verse 10. Now when Daniel learned the decree had been published, anyone who doesn't, for the next 30 days, who does not, when the music plays, or excuse me, anyone for the next 30 days who does not bow down and worship the king is going to be thrown into the lion's den. When he heard that decree, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. 3 times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking to God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about this, his royal decree. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or any or man except you, O king, would be thrown to the lion's den? The king answered, the decree stands in accordance with the laws of Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. Then they said to the king, oh, Daniel, one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the decree you had put in writing. He still prays 3 times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed, and he was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to the king and said to him, remember, O king, that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you. A stone
was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. All right. So Daniel, hearing this decree, what does he do when the walls crumble around him? Is that he goes and prays. What's interesting is that, like, you would think that maybe once he hears this decree, any person who prays to anything else, any man or worships anything or God besides the king will be thrown in the lion's den. You may think that, like, as you read the story, that Daniel's like, well, I'll show the king. I'll show him. I'm going to go down. I'm just going to start praying right out. But if you look at the scripture, it's like he goes up to his room. He goes up to his room and prays. The window's open towards Jerusalem, but he's not overtly going like, I'm just going to show him. I'm just going to go into the public square and I'm going to pray there. So it seems like he's not necessarily going into rebellion of like saying, I'll show him, nor is he hiding it, because he's like, the window's open. And apparently it seems like the men as a group, they go and seek him out. They're like, let's just follow Daniel and just see if he, let's just see if he prays. Let's see. If you notice what happens, if you look at the scripture, it says, three times a day he got down on his knees giving thanks to his God, just as he's done before. Just as he's always done. So it's not like he did this on purpose to go, I'm just going to show him. It's like, Daniel has always been doing this. He's always been getting down on his knees, and he's always been connecting with his Father. He's always been praying. This is what he's always been doing. This time, he's just going to him, and he's telling him, God, this is the decree. I'm telling you, he's pouring out his heart, most likely, to God, and saying, this is what it is. Right? And so we see him standing up, and it notice that it says that they all go in a group. All the men went in a group. It's almost like they need like some kind of crowd to kind of like go and like, you know, be a witness to Daniel, or kind of like take him down together. But I love watching people. Daniel like stands up in some ways. He like, though he's not overtly praying out in the square, he's neither hiding it either, and he stands up in the Lord. I love watching people. I don't know if you've seen this, if you've had the opportunity to witness people kind of stand up for something, stand up in principle, stand up in the Lord. I don't know. Sometimes I'll read around the nation of someone who's like, no, you can't tell me that we can't pray at school. You can't tell me that we can't read the Bible at school. I hear every once in a while, like, some high school students or, you know, middle school students of like, don't tell us that, because we have the constitutional right. And they stand up before administration, they stand up before teachers, they stand up before, you know, whoever. Or, you know, maybe you've seen this someplace where someone has stood up, and it's like the most, I don't know, for me it's the most inspiring thing when I can watch someone go take a stand and go, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the consequences. This is what God says, and we're going to stand up. Whatever happens, we're standing up, okay? That summer project I was telling you about, there was a time in college where, at least with Crusade, with this ministry, Campus Crusade for Christ, it's called Crew now. They have this opportunity during the summer where you can, I think I've told you about this at times, where you can go for a whole summer and you go to another place. They've got places all over, on beaches, Alaska, all over the world, really. But I went stateside. I went to New Hampshire. And what you do, you guys, it's kind of like this. It's like the retreat, only it's like for a couple of months, right? It's like you go, and my buddy and I, we drove out to New Hampshire, and you go, you get a job. So I worked at a sub shop called Sabo Subs for a couple of months. And you do Bible studies together, and you also do outreaches. You go out onto the beach and just share the gospel with people. It's just a great, amazing experience of like just stepping out and out of your comfort zone and just sharing the faith. But one of the guys that was in my group, he was also from Wisconsin, and he got a job at a convenience store, kind of like a 7-Eleven, something like that. And after he was there for a while, he noticed that the convenience store, the 7-Eleven or whatever it was they were selling, like most convenience stores, selling pornographic magazines, you know. And people come, and he's like, I don't feel like my conscience says I can't. I don't want to sell this. I don't want, if someone comes in and I'm like the store clerk, I don't want to like sell this to somebody. And so he went to the owners of the store, and he's like, I don't want to sell this. And he also said, I think you should take it out of the store. I think you should no longer sell this anymore in the convenience store. And the amazing, the cool thing was, is that the owners of the store said, okay, we won't. We'll take them all out, and we won't order them anymore, and we won't sell them anymore. And it was just neat to watch Dan, like, just, you know, I mean, I guess at the very worst, he could have just lost his job. Like, he'd had to find another job, something for the summer. But it was kind of neat for him to, like, say something and not just say, I'm not going to sell it, but, like, why don't you guys take this out? Take this out. And it was cool because during the summer project is they first start out with just kind of like staff leaders. Like we all just live in this giant house or whatever. And they have staff there. And then a few weeks through, like maybe 3 weeks into it, then the staff leaves and it's just student-led. And it was really cool to watch Dan, like, you know, the leaders were kind of watching everyone, saying, praying about who would be a good leader to lead this group, and they felt like watching Dan and his kind of conviction, kind of like Daniel going, no way, I'm not going to do it. They're like, this guy is a leader. This guy is ready to kind of lead, and so they made him the student leader and servant of the project. So I don't know, you guys, have you ever had to take a stand before? Have you ever been in a spot where you've had to go, I have to make a choice, like Daniel, or like my friend Dan, where you're like, I've got to make a choice to stand up. I know what God would want me to do. And in the face of, I don't know, in face of my friends, in face of losing my status, in face of losing popularity, in face of this, whatever, I'm going to choose to take a stand. Well, Daniel made a stand in Yahweh, but if we look at what's around him, look at it from Daniel's perspective, he's making a stand, but now he's made a stand, but now he's lowered into the lion's den, right? And so again, if you look at it from the perspective of where you might be in life, where it is like, I haven't done anything wrong, but my family is falling apart. My relationship with my husband, my relationship with my friend, my direction is falling. What I thought I was supposed to do is falling. Whatever it is, that's where Daniel is. He's like, I don't see how this can possibly work out for good, but I know what God wants me to do. He wants me to continue to worship Him. And so, I don't know, you guys, when I look out, I know some of you may be in this spot at any given time, maybe a few that are in the spot. Some of you, like I said, I want you to look at the book of Daniel, Daniel 6, and say, someday I'm going to need this passage, all right? Because let's see what happens. You guys know what happens. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answered, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel. He shut the mouths of lions. They have not hurt me because I have been found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown to the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. So, wow, what a gruesome, I don't know, sometimes you think, the Bible should have stuff like this in there, you know, like the Bible's like, should be, you know, but the Bible really, one of the things I can appreciate the Bible is that, man, it doesn't kind of cover over some of this stuff, right? Some people say, well, you know what, maybe what happened is that King Darius, obviously he's concerned for Daniel, he likes his leader, and he's made this decree, and, you know, maybe there was something, maybe King Darius, some historians, maybe King Darius, maybe he fed the lions, maybe just threw a bunch of meat down there, made the lions full, and so that when Daniel was lowered in there, he would be just fine, you know, they just weren't hungry anymore. Or maybe somehow they had some sort of mixture, some sort of potion, some sort of drugs that they gave to the lions, these drugs or potions, so the lions were whacked out, you know, and they didn't know, they were just like high or something, and so they didn't want to eat Daniel. Maybe that's why, you know. But boy, if you look at the passage, as soon as he was lifted up, the king said, these guys are totally liars, and I can see through what they were trying to do. Throw them and their families down in there. And said before they even hit the ground, the lions were like, ugh. So you can clearly see there was something that was preventing these lions. It wasn't like that they were full. We'll just wait. We'll just save him for later for a snack, or we're just drugged up or something. That's like they were hungry, right? They were hungry, right? So man, you can see God's power. Let's finish it off with these last few verses. It says, then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language throughout the land, may you prosper greatly. I issue a decree in every part of my kingdom. People must fear and reverence the God of Daniel, for he is a living God. He endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues, he saves, he performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth, and has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus in Persian. All right? So man, you see in the end, at least here, at least in this part, you can partly see what God was doing in some way, in some small sense. You can see God was using someone who is surrendered to him. Daniel's like, I give it up. Like, I'm going to have to trust you. I'm going to give up maybe my life, but I will not bow down and worship any other god. And man, I'm telling you, God is looking for anyone who is surrendered to him. God will use. God will use. And so you can kind of see what God was doing, what he had in mind. And sometimes you won't see, you guys. Sometimes, I mean, you look at Daniel here, and maybe you can see, well, look what happened. Because I surrendered, because I lived for him, because his power was demonstrated through me, and ultimately through the lions, King Darius saw it. He's like, this God, your God, is the God. Your God is the powerful God. Your God is truly amazing. I've never seen any kind of power from any of the gods I've ever seen before who could close the mouths of lions. And now King Darius is like, everyone has to worship this guy because he is the real. So you can kind of see kind of what the long-term purpose. But sometimes, you guys, we won't be able to see it. Sometimes you'll wonder, you'll be like, I've gone through this, and I still don't know why. what you're teaching me or why you did this, but I still have to, I'm still going to trust you. Ultimately, we have to end up in trusting him. We have a sovereign God. We have a sovereign God. Even though you will come to a point in your life, it's not if, but when you come to that point in your life, like Daniel, when for whatever reason, emotionally, physically, emotionally, you know, whatever it is, things crumble around you, relationally things crumble around you, and things are just like, I can't see the end of this. I have no idea how I'm going to come out of this. We have to go and say, our God is sovereign. He's powerful. He is the one who can change kings and change kingdoms. He is the one who can close the mouths of lions. I don't see my way out, but I'm just going to go to my knees. I'm just going to trust. I'm going to trust him. First, I'm going to examine myself. Is there anything that you're trying to teach me? Is there any sin in me that I just need to turn away from and turn around and repent and go back towards him? But if not, I'm just going to trust in my God. Because, man, he's powerful. He is so powerful. And I'm just going to wait this out. I'm going to keep on connecting with him, keep on trusting him until he shows me what it is, or maybe not. Because, you guys, we know that in history, not everyone ended up like Daniel, right? We know that not everyone, like, there was many Christians who were before lions whom God didn't save, right? Whom God didn't save. And yet, at the same time, God had a larger plan for them. God still used them. God still used them, even though they went to their death by the lions or however way. God still used them for his purposes and his glory. In fact, in Rome, they had to, like, they used to give people the opportunity to say things before you die, before we cast you to the lions. You have an opportunity, before we, whatever it is, before we kill you, you have an opportunity to say whatever you want. And people would, like the Bible describes in the New Testament, people would get up there, maybe not even planning, they didn't write anything out. They would say whatever God put on their hearts to say, and man, people would respond. People would be like, whoa. In fact, it was during that time when most Christians were being killed that Christianity exploded. It exploded because people are like, the power, there is something powerful in this person. Even though they've died, there's something powerful in this person. Okay? So today, this afternoon, we're not going to the lion's den. Thank goodness. We're going to wash cars. Phew. Easy, you guys. So easy, right? Just washing cars. It'll be a little cold, but no problem. But people will be watching us, you guys. People are watching us as we wash cars, as we...